Hi, everyone. Welcome to Octopod. Today we have a special guest. Her name is Soraka, and I'm definitely saying that wrong. We've already discussed this, but I'll have her say her name as well. And she went in on an awesome trip around the world to visit a bunch of different MPAs, and I'm going to have her tell you all about that. So without further ado, here's Soraka.
Hello, everyone. It's an honor to be with you today on Octopod. So as Ray and Ali already said, I started to travel around the world to visit marine protected areas from November 2017 until October 2018. It was altogether, I visited 17 countries in 11 months. During that time, I spoke with ministries of environment, NGOs, and also individual activists for marine conservation. So the aim was to learn myself about marine protected areas and actually how protected they really are, the enforcement of marine conservation, and also to inform the public about what's going on, especially check projects with children and youth on marine conservation. And I also volunteered with 3 organizations during that time.
Super cool. So do you know how many MPAs total you visited?
That's a good question. But I think I haven't actually counted them all because some of them were not really legal yet. So they were just, it's interesting because as you might know, not in every country, the definition for marine protected areas in every country is different. But I would say I would visit at least 1 or 2 in each country.
Oh, I was just going to ask if you had a favorite country or a favorite marine protected area.
I really liked Ceiba, the small country, small island in the Dutch Caribbean. They have, for example, they're very strong on shark conservation. And I visited the local conservation entity there. And yeah, they're doing pretty good work there. I really liked it there.
So you visited 17 countries in 11 months. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty incredible feat to accomplish, I have to say. I have trouble visiting 2 countries and I'm there for like 2 months. So I'm not the best traveler. So what sort of was your drive? You sort of mentioned it was your drive to do this, but in your email, you said you wanted to find a location for your marine conservation organization, Ocean Education. Can you speak a little bit more about what that organization is and sort of why that led you to visit all these MPAs in these countries?
Okay, that's a very good question. So let me start by talking about the drive actually to undertake such a crazy thing. I'm not a marine biologist. I'm a political scientist. I also studied languages and cultural science. It all started back in 2008 when I was starting to volunteer. I'm actually coming from the human rights sector. You know, I used to do work. I used to work with women on gender empowerment and gender equity. So that's where I'm coming from. And then in 2008, I was called to volunteer with a women's NGO in Peru in a small scale fishery town in Tortugas. Tortugas, that's how it's called. It means turtle in Spanish, or turtles. The plural.
Nice.
That's a good name. So the name of the town is such because there's a small island at the coast or like in front of the coast that you can see. And from the bird's eye perspective, it looks like a turtle. So that's where the name comes from. Mm-hmm. And why I was called to go there was because the domestic violence, especially against the women of the fishers, like had risen more than before. So I went and I talked with the women. I wanted to find out what was the cause. And to my surprise, they told me that the reason why they had been facing more domestic violence from their husbands, from the fishers, was because their husbands, they had to keep on coming back more and more with empty nets. So they couldn't fish the same amount they fished before anymore. They had to go out further with their little boats, which is more dangerous. And overfishing was due to, as they told me, was because there were fishing fleets from the neighboring country, like from Chile, for example, were coming in and getting all the fish that they were fishing before. So the husbands, they were coming back. And, well, no, it's not an excuse, but that's how things happen in human interaction sometimes. They were taking out all their aggression on the women. They started to drink. It's a very small town. There is not much to do there. At that time, there was no running water nor electricity. Yeah, for me, that was a very shocking experience. And that actually was the point that led me to undertake everything with ocean or marine conservation, because I understood that I always had this blind spot. I was always thinking that all the problems that we have in the world, you can change people by just working with the people themselves and do workshops and seminars and educate them. But there I understood there's something. I will never forget the moment when I was standing in front of the ocean and I said, wow, there's something I have been like seeing all the time, but I never understood what it is about. Yeah, so I got curious and never could forget what happened there and what impact the ocean had on the lives of the people that I encountered. So I started to do some research and read blogs and meet people who are connected with the ocean, like surfers or marine biologists and scientists, and learn from them, you know, because as I said, I'm not a marine biologist. Then I understood, you know, I want to make more people aware of the ocean, and that's where ocean education actually stems from. Like, educate myself about the ocean, as I did, and I keep on educating myself more and more, and also share whatever I learned with the general public.
Oh, that's absolutely incredible. And so you went then to all these different places and studied how these MPAs sort of help their communities. And yes, awesome. What were some of your findings when you visited all the MPAs? Do you see that they are more helpful to communities or not as helpful?
Well, it's very mixed. It's a very mixed experiences. In some countries, I found that I think it all comes down to politics as well. Politics is a very important factor on how seriously marine conservation is taken. If, for example, I had very good, you know, this is very subjective. It might not be the view of the government or the scientists who work there, but what I perceive as maybe a layperson is, for example, in South Africa, I met very good experiences with marine conservation there. They have also a local network of marine protected areas, so they do excellent work there. Whereas in other countries, for example, I found a lot of corruption there. I remember I was volunteering or I was visiting marine protected areas in the Caribbean. And on some islands, you know, enforcement is very difficult. Just imagine, for example, let's say Ray is a marine ranger and Ali is a fisher, and you two are cousins, or you are even brothers and sisters, you know, and or sisters. So you two are sisters and you're living like next to each other. And in these small Caribbean islands, it's very, very difficult. Like one person infringes a law and the other one has to enforce the law. But there is this personal relationship coming in.
Absolutely.
So yeah. This is something like, that I've been... definitely not following that.
Sorry, Ray.
I will give you the fish, probably. No, absolutely.
Yeah, I witnessed this in person, you know, where I was going on patrol with a marine ranger. And then all of a sudden, it was like the time where conch and lobster, if I remember correctly, was not supposed to be taken out of the ocean, because that was the period where they were produced. And then it was his neighbor. He met his neighbor with a big box. It was just coming from the ocean. It was like fishing, gone fishing. He came with this big box and then he said, the ranger said, what is this? Like, what do you have in the box? And then the neighbor said, it's nothing, blah, 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 you know. And then nobody ever had the idea to open the box and actually check what is in the box. So when they were discussing, I was just standing there and they were discussing like 30 minutes back and forth. And I really had the feeling that if somebody had dared to open the box, they would have found something that was not supposed to be in there.
What's in the box? Yeah.
Yeah. So these kind of things, and there's a lot of corruption, of course, you know, but it depends on what is the state of the infrastructure and what is the state of the political consciousness in each state. So it's very, yeah, it's very, how can I say? It depends on the country. I was really happy to have encountered good project with youth and kids. One thing that I wanted to share with you is also, it comes also with my personal history, is I just learned to swim with 33 years. I'm 34 now.
Wow. So, that's a big accomplishment. Congrats.
Thank you so much. My parents, they're from Sri Lanka. I'm the eldest daughter, and I'm also the only person in the family who can swim. You know, they come from an island, but what maybe people from the West don't know sometimes is that in a lot of poorer countries or in developing countries, people are not, they don't learn to swim. That is, I think, the first step to establish a positive connection with the ocean. There were a project, for example, with the Marine Megafauna Foundation in Mozambique. They have a project that's called Pequenos Nemos. That means little Nemos, you know, like finding Nemo.
Yeah.
So they do excellent things. They have a program where they teach children how to swim, and they also give marine education classes. So that's a good thing. And also in Grenada, you have a very passionate lady. Her name is Debbie, and she teaches also people how to swim for free. Yeah. So I think swimming is very key to establishing a good connection and the first connection for most of people with the ocean.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, I grew up in the middle of the country. Oh, no worries. No worries. Yeah. But I remember the first time ever swimming in the ocean, and that's like where my first connection to it came from. My parents, I grew up in Michigan, which has great lakes, but like the lakes are very different than the ocean, and just feeling the strength of the waves and seeing all the different life within it. It was a very magical experience. And so being able to give that to people, especially who live so close to the ocean, is such an important thing. Mm. And I would love to hear more about those organizations, but that's, yeah, incredible.
Not to mention just safety.
Mm-hmm.
People are so close. Yeah, you need to, if a kid falls in, they've got to be able to get back out.
Mm-hmm. And also when it comes to disaster, how do you call that? Like prevention? Or for example, when you have a tsunami or you have hurricanes, that the people can save themselves. I know, for example, of a swimming project from the government of Barbados. They have established something so that the lifeguards, they go to government staff and they teach them about swimming, or they teach them how to swim, actually. So in case of emergency, they will be able to save themselves and also others.
That's awesome.
Why is it that people who live on these island nations that don't know how to swim as much? You sort of mentioned it, but
yeah.
Can you explain?
Okay. So one thing that I learned is also from my parents is that sometimes when you, for example, in the West, you're used to going to the public swimming pool, or there are actually public swimming pools where you can go to. Even if you don't have that much money, you will still be able to afford it somehow. And also in the school, there is actually a pool that the school has access to teach the kids to go swimming, right?
Absolutely, yes.
So in most of the countries where I went to, there was nothing like that. And even my parents, there was no public swimming pool. Either you go swimming in the ocean or you don't go swimming at all. The pools, and also in some projects that I visited, and also in Mozambique, they had to ask hotels to give them some time to go and practice in the swimming pool, you know, because there is no other swimming pool around. So that is also an obstacle to overcome, because most hotels, as in, they're catering to richer people, and mostly they also, sometimes they want money, you know, in exchange, which is also for the NGO can be an obstacle to get access to the pool. Another thing is the cultural factor. For example, the Caribbean, they say, and they used to teach the former slaves that the ocean doesn't have a back door. That means that if you go into the ocean, you might never come back, because it will swallow you, it will take you and never give you back. That is one thing of having induced fear into the people. I remember I was going to the supermarket in Barbados, and there's a bus that comes back from the supermarket and drops you at home. And I was sitting next to an elderly lady. She was maybe in her 70s, I think. And then I told her about the swimming. And then she says, "Are you crazy? You know, this is so dangerous." And she says, she's living next to the beach, but she never stepped one foot into the ocean because she says she's so scared. I found that so crazy. Like, imagine Ray and Ellie, like, imagine you're living just next to the ocean and you never, ever gotten your feet wet. I don't know. Right. It was, for me, just incredible.
Yeah.
It's astounding. Yeah. Every time I'm near the ocean, I like run to it and put my feet.
Exactly. It's hard for me not to.
Yeah.
Yes. And the other thing is, I think it depends on where you live. For example, there are a lot of places next to the coast where it is actually very dangerous to go. And if you don't have the ability to swim, there are undercurrents, there are currents and rip currents and whatnot. So it is actually not a good idea to go in if you cannot swim.
Even if you can swim in some areas, I'm sure it's been a couple, well, at least one death in my family who was very good swimmer, but the ocean.
Really?
Right. Well, you know, the ocean is dangerous, but very, very wonderful as well.
Yeah. And if you have somebody who can teach you to swim, you know, you also need access to that. If nobody in your family can swim, then who is going to teach you that?
So tell us more about your organization that you started then. Will swimming be a component? What exactly are you trying to do with this?
So I haven't actually found a headquarters yet. It's just me at the moment. So what I want to do is I discovered several things along this journey. When I started to get knowledge about the ocean, not having studied it, I discovered that it's really actually very difficult as an outsider, as somebody who has not studied marine biology, to get access to courses or to get access to knowledge about the ocean. You can, of course, read everything on blogs or you can get books to read about, but actually you really have to make an effort. It's not as easy to get educated about the ocean in depth and in detail if you want to know things. So that's why I started to go to conferences. Like, I was kind of a tourist, you know. So I went to IMCC and IMPAC and all these conferences that are actually, you know, where scientists from all over the world and the best scientists who do stuff on marine conservation come, and then they present their papers and then they discuss the current state of marine conservation. So I went there and I prepared to go there and understand what they're actually talking about. So I think actually the general public, sometimes they hear things on the news, like for example, the Ocean Cleanup Project, but that's all there is. Just like outbursts of some topics that reach the general public, but that's it. So I think it's very important to get more information, especially about marine protected areas out there, to people who are not in marine biology or who are not connected at all to environmental conservation.
That's a wonderful goal. Even like being in marine conservation and ocean science, I feel like it can be hard to gain any knowledge because there's a lot of jargon and it's people don't want to talk to other people in a way that they can understand. So
And I think something that you did that was really cool is that you actually went to all these places and you saw them with your own eyes. So a lot of the times people are just sort of reading about them here and comparing them through other people's work, which is a great way of doing it and how it should, you know, how it's mostly done, but being able to get that firsthand experience of seeing all these different MPAs in action, I think that is such an incredible experience you just had.
I was going to say, I'm sure you know a lot of different aspects of these MPAs and people who even study them who haven't been there, just because even without your background in marine science, just from looking at them and talking to the people who work with them.
Thank you so much. Yeah, like something also that I discovered is the working, like there's so many things that I want to share with you. Like one thing is also the amount of, like the hard working conditions that marine biologists face, you know, in the field. When I went through these projects, I was like, it was very different. Sometimes I would visit projects in the office, have air condition and everything. And then I remember I visited this one project in Cape Verde, which is called Yoshvaraum. So they invited me on a trip to an uninhabited island, which is called Santa Lucia. So it was interesting, like, to see what the working conditions were, because they had to set up a camp. There was literally nothing on the island, you know, nothing. So they had to bring everything in from water, food, to set up a camp. There was nothing there. And I think sometimes when the general public, they see marine biologists as it's very romanticized, you know, the work that they do. it's like, oh, you get to swim with whales and, you know, it all looks very nice and comfy. But in the end, I feel, and you know better than me, because I think marine conservationists and marine biologists, they should get paid a lot more than they get paid. There are not enough jobs out there. And I think society in general should create much more jobs for environmental conservation than there are. So that is something. It's really hard because you see so many qualified people that have their PhDs, and they're still beating themselves up to get a volunteering position somewhere. And I think that, you know, I'm also like a social scientist. It's not like that I'm getting paid millions whatever work I get, but still, I say, come on, you have invested so much time in your education and in gaining experience, and nobody really wants to pay you for that. So that is something very sad. I think that's very sad, you know, and I think it's something that needs to get more into in the public.
Oh, yeah. And then the saddest part for me is when you do all this work and then the general public doesn't believe you with what you're seeing, you know, as a marine conservationist, you know, with the coral bleaching, with ocean acidification, all this stuff that people are doing out here. And then you take that out to the public and try to tell them that what's happening, the situations that the oceans are, and, you know, they won't believe you. That's the hardest part for me when it comes to ocean conservation as well. It's just trying to get the public to trust what your work is and what you're putting out there. I'm so interested in marine protected areas, and I love learning about them. Were there some distinguishing factors that you found, like some similarities between MPAs that you thought were really good versus MPAs you thought maybe could be better? Like, what are some of the factors that made an MPA work?
I think, like, one of the crucial factors is, from my perspective, you know, as a layperson, as I say, this is not a scientific paper or anything, but I think it comes down to financial resources. That is very key. MPAs that have money, you know, and then they have money to also hire qualified personnel, and also the motivation of the staff themselves. You know, like, if you have people that really understand and they embody marine, and that sounds maybe funny, but, you know, that really are living their job and they understand what it's about, and they just don't do it as, they could also be sitting in the back and be a clerk, but no, they really want to step up for the ocean, conserve biodiversity, the motivation of, yeah, and then also the political backup, the political support that you get from the government is very important. Yeah, so these are the factors that I think are very crucial. And one thing that I also want to emphasize on, and I think you also know very well about that, is there has to be an international network of marine protected areas. That's one of the goals why I visited all these marine protected areas, because I wanted to engage in a discussion with the actors in the field, and ask them, you know, what do you think about your marine protected area? And what do you think about working together with other people? I think there has to be more exchange on what is going on in each individual area and how they can work together to have better results. And there's also Glories, you know, of the Marine Conservation, yes, Institute. They're doing great work. And actually, that was one of my inspirations. I found their page back then, and I met also with them, and I'm really grateful for all the information they have given me, especially his name, Lance Morgan. Yeah, the president of Marine Conservation Institute. So yeah, they're doing great work.
Is there any other ideas or things that you would like to put out there from your travels?
I think, and one of the key, like, for example, since I came back, I'm started to give talks on my travel, what I did. And I, for example, just this Monday, I was at a school. I was at a high school giving a talk on marine conservation on the world trip to marine protected areas. And it was interesting to see the interaction of the youth with the topic. And I think there's a lot of room for improvement there, you know, like, people communicating more on marine protected areas, and especially in connection to the Fridays for Future movement at the moment. I think it needs to be clear where is the link between the ocean and climate change. For some people, it's not so obvious. You know, they think that it's actually two different topics, but it's not. So especially for kids and youth, yes. The link between ocean conservation and marine conservation and climate change is something that has to be emphasized.
I cannot agree more with that. And I think if there are any great teachers out there who are listening, who have come up with some interesting, you know, classroom games that sort of cover these topics, we would love to have them. I've been seeing some really great marine conservation K-5 games that people have been playing. So I think if someone can make up a good one for this, that would be excellent. Because that's the best way that I learned as a child, was definitely playing games and being able to connect to dots that way. And because climate change is while it's here now, and we're already seeing what's happening and changing in our earth, it's only going to become more and more apparent. And it is something that we should really be teaching our children. And because they're going to be the ones who have to deal with our grandparents, what they did with what we're doing now. Exactly. And it's only going to affect them more and more. And our ocean is our main, it's like where our life stems from, is what I believe. And so it's definitely something that we need to protect more and inform more. So the work you're doing, even just going out and visiting these places and then getting on here and talking about it and going to schools, that's such an important thing. And I thank you for that effort that you're putting in.
Thank you so much for being on, Taraka.
Thank you for having me. Yes. You're doing an awesome job.
And if anyone listening would like to have a chance to be on Octopod, feel free to send us an email. You can find our information anywhere you listen to this podcast, actually. So have an awesome rest of your day and rest of your life, Taraka. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody.